Welcome to episode 451 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure, coming from our brand new revamped studio. On this week's episode, we feature an old friend who's come back again. You might have heard him in the past in a segment called Cab Fare. This go-round, he's Travis Ignatowski, urban hiker. And we talk with him about what that means, being an urban hiker, about cities, about water cooler moments, his trajectory in life, being a coastal elitist, what normalcy actually is, and government, as well as hopes, dreams, and hookahs filled with hashish at Google, among other things. A grand reconnection with Travis Ignatowski this week. We have an EW essay titled Taxi Cab, and the third installment of our associate producer Dr. Pavise's radio play titled Watch the Ice, as performed by actor extraordinaire Dominic Azzarelli. And we have a poem called Kind Bud. All of this will be imbued, infused, with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it. Episode 451 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Things could get so bad, I know, but things could always be worse. There's a blessing tucked inside of each and every curse. You could be a selfish fool, but somehow not be selfish enough. Your glass could be half full, but you've already drank way too much. This is life. This is life. Merry Christmas. This is life. This is life. Oh, how humor you burst the bubble of all our hidden pain. Oh, how humor you clever mother, you're keeping everybody sane. Oh, how laughter you make us bastards feel some kind of joy. Like a golden token we find we're not broken, like some cheap little toys. This is life. This is life. Merry Christmas. This is life. This is life. Merry Christmas.
So fleeting, I hope that you're reading everything in between the lines. Life can have meaning if you keep dreaming all the way through the days and the nights. I saw you cry a little in the middle of a story you once told. Your thing of beauty, and we're all rooting for you not to fold.
This is life. This is life. Merry Christmas. This is life. This is life. Merry Christmas. This is life. This is life.
Taxi cab. You looking at me? At the Bowery over on 2nd Street near the tobacco shop next to the juice bar. She sits thinking of Caracas in December, the warm swells of breeze through the coconut trees, and the ruthless leaders breaking fingers to get at the truth about Santa. Drinking Fanta on a wooden bench in the middle of town. And nobody is around. It is too early in the day to shop. This pandemic of consumption and cough has taken a hell of a toll on our collective consciousness, though some extol the positives unbeknownst or imagined, like being home more with the family, more companionship for house dogs and cats and potbelly pigs, less daytime scurry through congested highway systems, less firing of fossil-fueled combustible injectors and pistons. It might be a little bit late to make a difference with global warming. I might have to cut the grass in December. This is crazy talk in the Northeast United States. It's been almost 12 months since the white-bearded jelly-belly saint was in the air, in a magical sleigh pulled through the clouds and stars by flying reindeer, up, up, and away. Who needs a life-changing public policy or thoughtful, honest dialogue about our challenges and bad habits as a species? All we need is a smartphone and the dumbed-down dollar menu drive-through dance. Morning, noon, and night. A slothful, nihilistic romance. And everything will be justo justo. Everything will be all right. The blinking, colorful porch lights are so goddamn bright.
Where you going, my brown-eyed son? You used to crawl, but now you run. You started off on a road half dark, and the river curled into a question mark. We sleep on diamond beaches, dear, and drink from prison streams so clear. You don't have to be rich to get around. There are mansions growing out of the ground. Days go by. Get out and see the world. Days go by. Took you far from home. It pushed you out of your comfort zone. There are kids out there with war paint on, and hearts break like crayons. Before you left, the world was small. Now the hills are bleeding like waterfalls. Bad things that are buried shallow, and cries for help with no echo. Days go by. Get out and see the world. Days go by. See what you're going through. Just knowing can beat up on you. You'll spend some time in the waiting place, and the purest things may leave no trace. Go up the mountain top and shine. I reflected on my long decline. Gathered
sunsets in my prime. Now I'm planting trees I'll never climb. Days go by, get out and see the world.
Hello?
Hello. Is this Travis Ignatowski?
It certainly is.
Well, it's so nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, sir.
It's been quite some time, hasn't it been?
It has, and you know, you reference, incidents, if you want to call them, in the past where you were on with a segment called Cab Fare, right?
That's correct. F-A-I-R, yes.
Yeah.
And this is, if I may remind your listeners, when you were just on community radio in northeastern Pennsylvania before you became the toast of Brooklyn. So it's quite an honor, I have to say.
Well, you know, you have a lot to offer, you know. So that's, you know, I'm not doing it because I think it's you're a nice guy and I want to, you know, give you a favor. It's because you have something to offer our program. So
well,
thank you.
So.
Thank you. And, you know, I guess we should start with letting people know a little bit about where you're at, where you're coming from. Physically, you are out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, right?
Correct.
Yeah, we have some listeners out there. I know there's a station out there, WPPM, that airs us out of Philadelphia. Hello to those folks. And we have a guy right from your neck of the woods featured. So, yeah, that's exciting.
Yes, I know some of your rogues gallery.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you do.
I know the surf, and I know the hobo.
Surf William and the global hobo, JQ. Yeah, that's right. You're of their ilk, I suppose. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yes, yes. And I believe you're among us, like it or not.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, Travis and I go way back. I think we met in 10th grade during Junior Achievement.
I think it was in 9th grade.
9th grade. Junior Achievement. Slow Gin Fizzes in the alley.
Yeah, and what an achievement that was.
Learned so much.
It's more junior than an achievement, I guess.
We were junior, and I don't know. I love that program, and it did get me a chance to connect.
You were
with
in
you.
A better one than I mean. We were the company that we like worked with. It was a fine company, Topps, which makes was like famous for making baseball cards, and the guy was local. And I went to the Who concert with his son, ironically. But they also made candy. They made chewing gum and other stuff. And we started making peanut brittle. That was our thing. And it was okay, but it wasn't a big seller. So then we changed over to lollipops, and we did much better with those.
I remember the
I
lollipops.
I remember what you did.
You had the popsicle stick. Right?
As
the
yeah. And the lollipops were like hockey pucks. They were gigantic. I don't know how anybody really maneuvered them, but...
Yeah, they were fantastic. I loved your lollipops. We both had a crush on Bean.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, she was beautiful.
Of course. Probably
still is. Anyhow, now we fast forward about 40 years. Right? About 40 years. And here we are, right? You know,
indeed.
Toward the end, as we record our conversation towards the end of 2021. And again, a new segment that we're going to feature on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, Travis Ignatowski. out of basically Mount Airy, Chestnut Hill, right, yep. area of Philadelphia. And, you know, you bill yourself as an urban hiker.
Right.
Yeah. So, first of all. Right,
well, so, obviously, you want to know some of the backstory here.
Yes.
And so, let's take it back to when we first started to have these conversations. I don't know if you were, I mean, you were probably involved in radio for a while, but I mean, I had just started another job in New York. I had had one in during the 2000s, and then I was working at home, and then I started going into New York every day, and that's when I started to meet with you on these chats, and that's when I came up with the idea for Cab Fare, part of which, you know, is an inside joke.
Yeah.
But I also thought that, you know, I'm going to be making some occasional dispatches, and they'll tend to be from big cities or from cities, because I live in one. I work in an even bigger one. And I remember that in the beginning when I made – when we had some of our conversations, I called you from business trips. We talked from Boston. I was in once.
Amsterdam.
I think I was in San Francisco. No, not anything, nothing overseas.
Oh, you did. You did call me.
I've been overseas, but I don't. That was after. I mean, we talked from Orlando. I was at one time.
That's right. Amsterdam was off air. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That wouldn't have been acceptable for FCC standards.
No, that's true. You were in the middle of debauchery.
Well, no, I was trying to help others out of their debauched lives.
Oh yes. Excuse me. That's correct. Yes. Anyway.
But yeah, the first time we spoke, I think I was walking around Washington Square Park. I think I called you from a taxi cab once, so, you know. So anyway, the name Travis Ignatowski is a reference to Travis Bickle, of course, from Taxi Driver, and Jim Ignatowski from the show Taxi. So it's a whole taxi cab-related identity.
Yeah.
The urban hiker. An urban hiker is a shoe.
Ah.
And perhaps you've seen these. You may even own some. If you ever go to like an REI or an Eastern Mountain Sports or even like Dick's, and you go into the shoe area, they'll have these. The only brand name I know is the ones that I have, and they're Merrells. But you know, they're like a big sneaker, and they're usually like gray or brown, and they're hiking shoes, and they're certainly good for, you know, if you're hiking around in the Endless Mountains or in the Catskills or something that's pretty. You probably could even use it on the Appalachian Trail. I don't think you could use these things if you were
Mount Everest,
you know, up on K2 or something. Yeah, exactly. Right. But my feeling on these, and I had, you know, been wearing them for years, and I got some remarks from my wife, like sometimes being out with these on.
Snide.
Notice that.
Snide.
Well, like funny remarks, but that. Men would wear. I didn't see women doing this too much, but you'd see guys out in restaurants and stuff, you know, with a nice shirt and casual kind of pants on, with these sneaker shoe hiker things. And it was always in cities, so I decided, you know, these are like urban hikers, so that's the that's where that name comes from. But it fits in with the notion of being in cities when we've been discussing things. And like I said, I live in a city, etc. So there's the whole the skinny on Travis Ignatowski and urban hiker.
And I guess you're going to run with this in a way. So this
for the
is
time being.
you're going to share some of what you garner, some of what you experience as an urban hiker, figuratively. You know, despite the literal shoe, you're also
We're done with the shoe, you know, references.
Right.
But one of the things I've been thinking about, anticipating this conversation about cities, which I love. I love living in a city. I love working in a big city. Is my fear for their future with all that's going on. I mean, it's certainly convenient to be able to work from home, as I've been able to do for years, long before COVID, and it was certainly essential during that time period. For those of us who are lucky enough to be able to do this. But now, offices like the place I work, among others, are probably realizing the non-necessity of having this very expensive downtown location. when all that everybody really does all day long, at least where I work, and I suppose where a lot of people work, is stare at a computer and do research online or working on databases or interacting with one form of software or another and sending emails and using the phone. And you could easily do that from home, which we've all been doing to, you know, pretty much undisrupted success. And this could mean good things for a lot of people, certainly like people with kids and stuff, to be able to work from home. And I mean, there's certainly positives, but I also fear for, you know, what's going to happen to all these places that that sell breakfast and lunch during working hours, and just the vibrancy of downtowns. Is that going to be affected? Is the commercial real estate market going to be affected and negatively affect the tax revenue that cities need to run their basic services? And I don't know, maybe make property taxes go up or have some other unexpected consequences. So
right. I think that's going to happen. It's going to be strange. Big cities, like you work in Manhattan, live in Philly, but smaller, they're going to feel this effect.
And to make that possible, I drive to Trenton, New Jersey, and I take New Jersey Transit, which I'm sure is doing fine, but I mean, there's a local transit system in Philadelphia called SEPTA.
Yep.
I don't know where the marketing people were on that one, but
Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority.
Yes, that's what it stands for. I think they should have called it SPARTA, and you could, you know, apply all the relevant terms to that, which I think has a better implication than SEPTA.
But isn't this going to help middle size and smaller cities?
My point here is that decreased ride. I thought the train line that comes near our house is pretty much non-existent. They shut it down completely during 2020, and now it's back, but they only run it a couple times per day. So as cities try to get back up and running, both for during the workday and even to try and have a nightlife, you know, for people who want to take public transit, it's challenging because there's all these unexpected, you know, these ripple effects of what's happening now. So
Yeah, and I, you know, as I was thinking and saying, I think middle-sized cities and smaller cities could benefit if people are able to stay home but still work for the big company that
For sure.
Is paying the New York City wage still, but they might decrease that. Who knows? That's another thing.
Well, that's the big question. But even if they decrease it somewhat, it might still, you know, raise the pay scale in smaller cities that are wherever they are. Yeah, and that may have who knows what the effects would be on any town USA if all of a sudden there's
an influx,
an enclave of people who have a lot more money. I mean, obviously there'll be good benefit, there'll be positive elements to that.
But it'll gentrify in a way the whole town.
It's possible, yeah.
And then the people that are living and working there in the smaller town making less money, they won't be able to afford it anymore.
Or the person, like the couple that has been waiting 5 years to buy that house, and they're just within reach of it, and then all of a sudden there's this influx of people from a city that's 100 miles away that is paying way higher wages, and they've got jobs. Maybe, you know, he's a nurse and she's a teacher, and they can't really leave. Now they might be priced out.
Right.
But that kind of stuff happens all the time in you know, in urban settings.
Right, but now it spreads. The gentrification, it's kind of interesting when you look at it. The gentrification that is affected by a place like New York City could reach to, the Poconos or, you know, into other states.
In the case of that
New
example,
Jersey.
It's already, I mean, people have been living in Jersey forever.
But even farther now, farther away, though. You can, you know, usually an hour and a half that, you know, you would do that maybe.
Even, you mentioned the Poconos, I think that's been happening. Allentown, I mean, way back when, Scranton, you know, our locale, was the third biggest city in Pennsylvania till about 1950. And then it was Erie until around 1990, I think, which was around the time they completed the extension of 78. Where it went all the way, you know, to Allentown, basically, on the western side, and then to the Holland Tunnel. And now Allentown is the third largest city in Pennsylvania.
And you equate that to the transportation that was...
Yeah. I mean, not just for New York, but there's great jobs. Like, the opportunities in New Jersey, which right. has been benefiting from, you know, New York City and Philly for forever, and now, its own industries.
Now let's shift a bit from that. And so when you look at cities, you know, again, an urban hiker, you say you love cities, and you're concerned about certain aspects of what you love going away, not being economically feasible anymore. But can you be more, I guess, specific, or paint us a picture of, you know, why do you love a Philadelphia or a New York or a Boston or wherever else so much?
Well, I mean, there's certainly lots of problems in cities.
Of course. But
I mean, from my own experience, just the proximity of things to do, the ability to, if you're lucky enough in the place that you live in an urban setting, to be able to just walk to the grocery store or to the pharmacy or wherever you need to, or take public transit, having lots of neighbors. I mean, I could see like living out in nice bucolic areas, certainly lovely as well and has its advantages, but you know, I've embraced the life that I've chosen, and I've been in a big city for 35 years. And, the vibrancy, the culture, I mean, those are the obvious things that you hear people talk about, but the convenience, and just the constant, so it seems the things that you're able to do, the variety of people you can meet, just in day-to-day life.
Yeah. I agree. Now, as this pandemic has continued, ebbed a bit, but still not over, you just explained how things have changed. And do you think it's irrevocable, a lot of the changes that have occurred? Or do you think it's just a phase we're going through?
And we'll suspect some of them are. I mean, some things are probably not going back, but I don't know which ones they are. Maybe some of the things that can be more easily dispensed with from the before times, quote unquote. And some of them might be positive things, like more flexibility. I mean, a lot of firms might want to really try to keep their downtown location. Certainly they're tied into long leases. I mean, it's not like living in an apartment where you sign a year lease or something like that. You get a space in one of these office buildings, you might sign a 30-year lease. And they're locked into them, and they want to make that work. And there are advantages to, I mean, here's the funny thing. It's like I've been, like I said, I mentioned before that I've been working from home, you know, occasionally, long before COVID. And, if I did this all the time, I'd go nuts. I mean, I like to interact with people. That's why I like living in cities. It would be, it's good to be able to see your colleagues and have face-to-face meetings and just be away from your home, like to have a change of setting between when you're in your home environment and when you're in your work environment.
No doubt. I think it's beneficial for sure.
I mean, I can do it to a certain extent. And I've been lucky enough to travel a lot. So even if I'm not going into the office every day, I'm going different places. And I would, before COVID, I would go to coffee shops and universities and different places to work, because going to New York, it's far. If we were somehow able to tweak the business model and the taxes so that cities weren't devastated by a shift to working at home, should that occur, there would be a loss of the water cooler moment, if you will, the elements of working that aren't specifically what you do every day in accomplishing what you need to do, but just the ideas that spark up by being, you know, having in-person interactions with colleagues, but also the fun it is just to be around like that group of people that you know, and you'd never have that if you were only in a remote virtual kind of situation.
Right, but
in my opinion,
I think you might be right there. But don't forget, you're going to work not to have fun, and not to interact with people, but to produce, and to feed the economic machine. Let's not forget that.
Well, yes, that's true.
Travis Ignatowski.
That I'm not arguing that, but I would say that to the extent that it's enjoyable and fun, for lack of a better word, to do this is conducive to being productive and by extension feed the economic machine.
Oh, you're one of those new wave management people.
That's right.
You know, no walls. Let's
I'm a post 1925, I am.
Yeah, you like the Google model.
Well, I mean, I've heard things about their whole, and I visited Google once, not the one in California, but the one in New York, and there certainly was, like, there were beanbag chairs around and a ping pong table.
Hookahs? Did they have hookahs packed with hashish?
I don't know. I didn't get into the inner sanctum, but they did do a check on my computer that I'm sure was very thorough. It was probably like the computer equivalent of a high-pressure enema. Well, I mean, they don't want people bringing in any computer viruses, I guess. But I've heard that some of that culture is changing, where it's just like, you know, they try to emulate a college campus or whatever the idea was. I mean, I think that a lot of managers in a lot of, like, high-stakes companies with the, you know, billion-dollar companies look into these questions all the time of, like, the best sort of combination of quiet time and interaction and whatever it is that to try and get the most out of their employees.
Right, and create, I think some of them generally want to create an atmosphere that, you know, is pleasant, but again, not one that is not, that is non or unproductive. That balance is key.
For sure.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
Now, you know, when we're talking about these tendencies, these trends in big cities and in corporations, and then you step back a bit, and you know, you're a man in his mid 50s. What?
Thanks.
I mean, do you ever sit back as you're sitting in a place like Washington Square Park, or you know, a nice little pocket green space in Philadelphia, and wonder what the point is? Like, what am I doing? What am I working toward? Where am I coming from? What's the point?
I don't really get that existential, like, maybe I should more often, but no, I mean, I'm generally happy with my trajectory in life, broadly speaking, whether it's in my personal life or my work, so I haven't had to think about that in a while, so the answer, I guess, is no.
Okay. I guess that's healthy, I suppose, unless you're suppressing things. I'm not sure.
I don't know. You're trying to bring me down all these dark alleys with, like, feeding the machine and suppressing things.
I've tried to create drama for the radio.
That's right. Yes.
So let's get more, I guess, narrow in our analysis, or, you know, what we're looking at. Let's be more specific. How about the last year, 2021? You know, again, we're talking toward the end of 2021 right now. What do you make of it?
It was a weird year. I mean, certainly 2020 was for sure a weird year. But it had a lot of ups. I mean, and everything is dictated. And I heard something on the radio today, and just that COVID kind of dominates everything. It's ruling everything. Whether you're wherever you are on the spectrum of beliefs that people have about it, it's ruling our lives. And that certainly was true in 2021, and likely will be next year as well. I mean, there was like what seemed to be like a light at the end of potentially a light at the end of the tunnel. I guess it was around June.
Right.
After a substantial number of people got vaccinated before we had Delta, when we were back on the original recipe. And my gym allowed people to work out, to come in there, not only come in there, but work out without a mask. That's all gone now. We're back to, an earlier circumstance. That's my takeaway from 2021. It was kind of a letdown, because certainly we were all hoping in 2020 that we would have turned a corner. It seems as though, from my recollection of hearing about the 1918 virus, that like after 2 years or so, it just sort of disappeared. Now, I don't know. I mean, they certainly didn't have the technical understanding that we have now, and there were no vaccines. Maybe just a whole lot of people died, and other people got it, and some people didn't die, and that's what happened. Or there were the nature of that pandemic was so different enough that there was herd immunity, and it essentially went away. Probably didn't go away as quickly in various parts of the world as it maybe did in the United States, but nonetheless.
And people probably weren't as mobile. People weren't as mobile back then either.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. And I'm sure that that's part of the thing. But at the same time, people still needed to eat, and they needed to work to be able to make money to be able to eat. And you couldn't work from home in the manner that I mean, maybe some people could use the telephone, but there was nothing like today where you could order whatever you wanted from Amazon and work from home if you could afford to.
Right, go on Zoom or something.
There was a lot more people that had to actually go into wherever they went into to earn their money.
And so, how do you think the government is doing, local, state, federal, with regard to the pandemic and just some of the social strife and challenges and problems we have over this last year?
Well, I mean, you certainly can't compare local, state, and federal because there's only one federal, and I think that they've been pretty good about it to the extent. I mean, seems to be some inconsistencies, but I think that they're trying to keep up with what science is telling us as this whole thing permutates and devolves and evolves and changes. And as far as local and state responses, that depends on where you live, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we do have a problem still, as you said. And even when you go to cities, big cities, their take and their day-to-day approach is different than when you go to smaller cities or towns. You know, you go to a larger city, people are wearing masks. You're not allowed into a business unless you have a vaccination card.
Well,
show.
You think about the places, especially New York.
But that's not the case in a place.
Because they're so densely on top of each other.
That's right. That's right. I guess that's the reason. But is it also a mentality, though? I wonder.
Probably. I mean, yeah, I guess so. I haven't spent much time, by which I mean no time, in you know, small rural areas for the most part.
Because you're an elitist.
Yes, I'm a coastal elitist, yes. No, I it's not that I don't like some small rural places, especially quaint New England towns. No, just kidding. But, this, you know, I go where I go, and I haven't been going anywhere for the most part in the last almost 2 years like everybody else.
Now,
so I haven't been to New York since the early part of 2020.
What about that stinks. What about social issues? Outside of the pandemic, our endemic racism and our right leaning brothers and sisters who seem to hold on to these strange, unrealistic views about what is going on in the world and you know, what's going on in politics in Washington. What do you make of all of that?
It's a scary time to live in, is what I make of it. And it's not because, I mean, there's always been divergences of political persuasions and parties, but what we lived through in the last couple years, which culminated at the beginning of this year, is of a different order, in my opinion.
How so?
And, well, it's because I think that it's akin to what we've seen, you know, in countries that were taken over by dictators. I mean, I think our system is robust. I hope it is. But I don't want to see any, like, cult of personality trying to take over the country and, as an autocrat. And there's certainly been totalitarian autocrats on the left and the right throughout the last 100 years, probably longer.
Here in the U.S.?
No, all over the world.
Yeah.
And I think what we saw with the former administration is just really frightening and, of a, like I said, of a different order. So I don't know what's going to happen with all that. And people didn't. And this and COVID are the, you know, are pretty much what you hear about in the public discourse, to pretty much to the exclusion of all else. I mean, other global problems and national problems, which are also important. Yeah, what's going on politically, and it all's intertwined to a certain extent, is
definitely
it's very concerning.
It is. It's a power struggle, and it's a cultural sort of mindset war, you know, outlook in a way, struggle for us to define who we are or work with the differences that truly exist here in the United States and beyond. But I'm talking primarily about the United States. Now, you know, we're just about out of time. Travis Ignatowski, one of our newest contributors on Troubadours and Rock on Tour. I'm happy to say you'll be hearing more of him in 2022. In a couple of words, because again, we're just about out of time. What do you hope for in 2022? Or what do you predict? Whatever way you want to take it.
Let's see. That's a tough question. I would hope that there will be more of a return to, I not to use the word normal or normalcy, because I'm not even really sure what that would be, but something more predictable and more manageable for everybody, not just people in big cities or people who share my political views, but for all of us. And I think if that were to happen, by whatever combination of circumstances would give rise to that, then it would probably help alleviate some of the political upheaval as well. It wouldn't make it go away, because there's never not been a time when we've had these kinds of issues. But I mean, if you look within our lives at how contentious and frightening it was during, say, the worst parts of the Vietnam War, when people on either side of these of the political spectrum were, you know, really at each other's throats, and families like were breaking up over this. And then as the war, after the war ended and things got a little bit, at least that was gone. You know, there seemed to be more of a predictability and a return to something that wasn't as bad. I will rather put it that way than to say to normalcy, because we've had major problems in the United States throughout its entire history. And such problems aren't exclusive to the U.S., but this is where we live, so we're talking about it. But, you know, it's not just America. All the evils of humanity are because of humans, and we're everywhere. So just as all the good things are, you know, we're a paradox. So
nicely
so
said.
There you have it.
Nicely said. Travis Ignatowski, I think you hit a triple first time back. Yeah, but, you know, you're rounding third. Maybe it'll end up being an in the Parker. We'll see.
What if I stop to tie my shoe?
Well, I don't think that'd be a good way to finish. You gotta just trust that you can make it to home without tripping on your shoelace.
I don't want to have my shoe untied. I'm thinking more on the fashion respect here.
We'll have to save that for next time. I'll have to reflect on that. You got me existential on the shoelace thing now.
I think you're too existential for your own good.
I might be. But nonetheless, Travis, it's a pleasure talking with you. Happy holidays to you and your wife and all all the special people in your life. Thank you for taking time out.
Thank you, too. Take care.
Ciao. Have
Did I ever tell you the story of the grouper? Yeah, the fish, grouper. Now, I love fish. All kinds of fish. Trout, bass, red snapper, smelts at Christmas time, sardines, even a fan of the anchovy. Anyway, I love me some grouper. Fried grouper. So a friend of mine, Freddie Fricatelli, says he's got a line on some grouper. Fresh and free. I didn't ask where the grouper came from. Fish don't just fall from the sky, you know. You have to catch them. Freddie catches all sorts of stuff, but he doesn't go fishing. I never knew how Freddie made a living, and I never asked about that either. He always seemed to have cash and was always buying rounds at the bar. Generous fellow, Freddie. The back of his old station wagon was filled with all sorts of stuff. Need a wrench? Freddie had a crate of wrenches. Need a golf ball? Freddie has the best. Brand new. Want to give your special lady a fur? Freddie had a couple of admittedly mangy furs on hand. Who wears furs anyway? Pens, pencils, socks, thermometers, towels, spice racks, you name it. Freddie had it, or he can get it pretty quickly. Now, Freddie had a girlfriend, Sugar. Don't know what her real name is. Now, Sugar wasn't too sweet, but she was sassy. You might say they were in cahoots. According to the scuttlebutt I heard at the bar, Sugar was the brains of the operation, and Freddie was the high-talking gopher. If you listen to Freddie, Sugar was just his classy assistant, an aide-de-camp, so to speak. If you listen to Sugar, Freddie couldn't find the handle of a toilet without directions and a map. They were a great team for a while. Then one day Sugar headed off to Vegas with some slick character, and Freddie stayed home and pined and moped. Of course, that was after my fish story. Anyway, Freddie told me about the grouper. As I mentioned, I'm a fish lover. I don't go fishing. My old man hated fishing. But he loved fish, too. Especially fried fish. And one of the reasons I got so excited about Freddie's promised shipment was a memory I had. When I was a kid, my family had fish fry nights. My mom would fry up the fish and we'd eat it in the backyard with beans and corn and her secret recipe coleslaw. Mom made a great coleslaw and turned me into a coleslaw snob. In fact, I've never found coleslaw to match my mom's. And the fish that she fried up was, you guessed it, grouper. We always had a swell time until Dad got loaded and started brooding and then yelling and eventually flinging a plate of grouper over the backyard fence and storming off to the bar. So I had a history with that particular fish. There I was, all set for my grouper. My taste buds were already tingling. I downed a few beers, and through the window of the bar, I see Sugar waving her arms at me, trying to get my attention but not alert the barflies, who were also waiting for their grouper, but were too distracted by arguments or the television to notice her. I got the message, snuck out the back door, and met her in the alley behind the bar. "Problem with the fish," Sugar says. She points down the alley, and I see Freddie leaning on his old station wagon, smoking a butt, and looking miserable. I head towards the wagon, and I'm almost knocked over by the smell of fish. In the back of the wagon were large bins of the sorriest grouper you'd ever seen, staring up at me with dead eyes and giving off a god-awful stench. "What happened, Freddie? They look disgusting," I cried. "Got there a little late." "A little late?" Sugar queried, with characteristic sarcasm. My man sort of lied about the condition of the grouper. "Sort of," Sugar smirked. Freddie started sobbing. Sugar shook her head, and I backed down the alley to escape the aroma of the foul fish. Well, Sugar left Freddie a little while later. Freddie was never himself after, and I haven't had grouper since. And that's my fish story. I gotta go. Watch the ice.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you'd drop
in. So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
I. My mother will start to
beautiful
worry.
What you'll hurt.
My father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace roar.
So really, I'd better
beautiful,
scurry.
Please don't
but
hurt.
Maybe just a half a drink.
Put
more.
Some records on while I pull.
Neighbors might think.
Baby, it's bad.
Lyle, what's in this drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight now. I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
Ought to say no, no.
Mind if I'm moving close?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
Really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out. Baby, it's cold outside.
I really must go.
But baby, it's cold outside.
No, the answer is no.
I say it's cold out there.
The welcome has been.
How lucky that you dropped in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that
my
stone.
Sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the
waves
door.
On a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is
gosh,
vicious.
Your lips are
well,
delicious.
Maybe just a sip and more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to get home.
Baby, you freeze out there.
Say, lend me your comb.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been grand.
I'm thrilled when
but
you touch
don't
my
you see?
How can you do this thing to
there's
me?
There's bound to be a dog to
I think of my lifelong sorrow.
At least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and died.
Oh, I really can't stay.
Oh, that old out, baby, it's cold outside.
Cold outside.
Kind Bud. Hey, Miss Bud Tender, standing on the other side of the counter with that trim backside. Facing the safety deposit drawers filled with indica, sativa, and hybrid strains. All are getting stoned, even the old folks, to ease the pain, to soften the strain, to smell the wet grass and hear the birds sing and the cats purr on the front porch swing. Enjoying some relief from the December rain.
Frosted window panes, candles gleaming inside, painted candy canes on the tree. Santa's on his way, he's filled his sleigh with things, things for you and for me. It's that time of year when the world falls in love, every song you hear seems to say Merry Christmas, may your New Year dreams come true. And this song of mine in three-quarter time wishes you and yours the same thing too.
And there you have it, episode 451 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this holiday-tinged episode possible. Travis Ignatowski, our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, actor extraordinaire Dominic Azzarelli, and these musical artists, Thelonious Monk, the Lumineers and Daniel Rodriguez, Brett Denon, Phoebe Bridgers, Lyle Lovett, Kat Edmondson, Nellie Mackay, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. And, of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and try to do our best with this time. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.